In the track of fear, there is no justice. You make yourself pay 1,000 times for the same mistake. You make your partner or your friend pay 1,000 times for the same mistake. This creates a sense of injustice and opens many emotional wounds. Then, of course, you set yourself up to fail. Humans have dramas for everything, even for something so simple and so little. We see these dramas in normal relationships in hell because couples are in the track of fear. In every relationship, there are two halves of that relationship. One half is you, and the other half is your son, your daughter, your father, your mother, your friends, your partner. Of those halves, you are only responsible for your half. You are not responsible for the other half. It doesn't matter how close you think you are or how strongly you think you love, there is no way you can be responsible for what is inside another person's head. You can never know what that person feels, what that person believes, all the assumptions he makes. You don't know anything about that person. That is the truth. But what do? We try to be responsible for the other half, and that is why relationships in hell are based on fear, drama, and the war of control. If we are in a war of control, it is because we have no respect. The truth is that we don't love. It is selfishness, not love. It is just to have the little doses that make us feel good. When we have no respect, there is a war of control because each person feels responsible for the other. I have to control you because I don't respect you. I have to be responsible for you because whatever happens to you is going to hurt me and I want to avoid pain. Then if I see that you are not being responsible, I am going to try to make you be responsible from my point of view. But it doesn't mean that I am right. This is what happens when we come from the track of fear. Because there is no respect, I act as though you are not good enough or intelligent enough to see what is good or not good for you. I make the assumption that you are not strong enough to go into certain situations and take care of yourself. I have to take control and say, let me do it for you, or don't do that. I try to suppress your half of the relationship and take control of the whole thing. If I take control of our whole relationship, where is your part? It doesn't work. With the other half, we can share, we can enjoy, we can create the most wonderful dream together. But the other half always has its own dream, its own will, and we can never control that dream no matter how hard we try. Then we have a choice. We can create a conflict and a war of control, or we can become a playmate and a team player. Playmates and team players play together, but not against each other. If you are playing tennis, you have a partner, you are a team, and you never go against each other. Never. Even if you both play tennis differently, you have the same goal, to have fun together, to play together, to be playmates. If you have a partner who wants to control your game, and he says, no, don't play like that, play like this, you're doing it wrong, you're not going to have any fun. Eventually, you won't want to play with that partner anymore. Instead of being a team, your partner wants to control how you play. And without the concept of a team, you are always going to have conflict. If you see your partnership, your romantic relationship, as a team, everything will start to improve. In a relationship, as in a game, it's not about winning or losing. You're playing because you want to have fun. In the track of love, you are giving more than taking. And of course, you love yourself so much that you don't allow selfish people to take advantage of you. Selfishness, control, and fear will break almost any relationship. Generosity, freedom, and love will create the most beautiful relationship, an ongoing romance. To master a relationship is all about you. The first step is to become aware, to know that everyone dreams his own dream. Once you know this, you can be responsible for your half of the relationship, which is you. If you know that you are only responsible for half of the relationship, you can easily control your half. It is not up to us to control the other half. If we respect, we know that our partner or friend or son or mother is completely responsible for his or her own half. If we respect the other half, there is always going to be peace in that relationship. There is no war. Next, if you know what is love and what is fear, you become aware of the way you communicate your dreams to others. The quality of your communication depends upon the choices you make in each moment, whether you tune your emotional body to love or to fear. If you catch yourself in the track of fear, just by having that awareness, you can shift your attention into the track of love. Just by seeing where you are, just by changing your attention, everything around you will change. Finally, if you are aware that no one else can make you happy, and that happiness is the result of love coming out of you, this becomes the greatest mastery of the Toltecs, the mastery of love. We can talk about love and write 1,000 books about it, but love will be completely different for each of us because we have to experience love. Love is not about concepts. Love is about action. Love in action can only produce happiness. Fear in action can only produce suffering. The only way to master love is to practice love. You don't need to justify or explain your love. You just need to practice your love. Practice creates the master.
Chapter 5, The Perfect Relationship. Imagine a perfect relationship. You are always intensely happy with your partner because you live with the perfect woman or man for you. How would you describe your life with this person? Well, the way you relate with this person will be exactly the way you relate with a dog. A dog is a dog. It doesn't matter what you do, it's going to be a dog. You're not going to change a dog for a cat or a dog for a horse. It is what it is. Just accepting this fact in your relations with other humans is very important. You cannot change other people. You love them the way they are, or you don't. You accept them the way they are, or you don't. To try to change them to fit what you want them to be is like trying to change a dog for a cat, or a cat for a horse. That is a fact. They are what they are. You are what you are. You dance or you don't dance. You need to be completely honest with yourself, to say what you want, and see if you are willing to dance or not. You must understand this point because it is very important. When you truly understand, you are likely to see what is true about others and not just see what you want to see. If you own a dog or a cat, think about how you relate to your pet. Let's consider your relationship with a dog, for example. The animal knows how to have a perfect relationship with you. When your dog does something wrong, what do you do with your dog? A dog doesn't care what you do. It just loves you. It doesn't have any expectations. Isn't that wonderful? But what about your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your husband, or your wife? They have so many expectations, and they're changing all the time. The dog is responsible for its half of the relationship with you. One half of the relationship is completely normal, the dog's half. When you come home, it barks at you. It wags its tail. It pants because it's so happy to see you. It does its part very well, and you know it is the perfect dog. Your part is almost perfect also. You take care of your dog. You play with your dog. You love your dog unconditionally. You will do almost anything for your dog. Most people can easily imagine this kind of relationship with their dog, but why not with a woman or with a man? Do you know any woman or man who is not perfect? A dog is a dog, and that is okay with you. You don't need to make it be a dog, and the dog doesn't try to make you be a good human. Then why can't we allow a woman to be a woman, or a man to be a man, and love that human just the way he or she is without trying to change that person? Perhaps you're thinking, but what if I'm not with the right woman or the right man? Well, that's a very important question. Of course, you have to choose the right woman or the right man. And what is the right woman, the right man? Someone who wants to go in the same direction as you do. Someone who is compatible with your views and values, emotionally, physically, economically, spiritually. How do you know if your partner is right for you? Let's imagine that you're a man and a woman is going to choose you. If there are 100 women looking for a man, and each will look at you as a possibility, for how many of these women will you be the right man? The answer is, you don't know. That is why you need to explore and take the risk. But I can tell you that the right woman for you is the woman you love just the way she is, the woman you don't need to change at all. That's the right woman for you. You are lucky if you find the right woman for you, and at the same time, you are the right man for her. You are going to be the right man for her if she loves you just the way you are, and she doesn't want to change you. She doesn't have to be responsible for you. She can trust that you are going to be what you claim you are, what you project you are. She can be as honest as possible and project to you what she is. She will not come to you pretending to be something that you later discover she is not. The one who loves you just the way you are. Because if someone wants to change you, it means you are not what that person wants. You know, it's easy to love your dog because your dog doesn't have opinions about you. Your dog loves you unconditionally. This is important. Then if your partner loves you just the way you are, it is just like the dog loves you. You can be yourself with your partner. You can be a man or you can be a woman, just the way the dog can be a dog with you. When you meet a person, just after the hello, she starts sending you information right away. She can hardly wait to share her dream with you. She opens herself even if she doesn't know she's doing it. It's so easy for you to see every person just the way she is. You don't need to lie to yourself. You can see what it is you're buying, and you either want it or you don't. But you cannot blame the other person for being a dog or a cat or a horse. If you want a dog, then why are you getting a cat? If you want a cat, why would you get a horse or a chicken? You know the kind of man or woman that you want? The one who makes your heart sing. The one who is aligned with the way you are. The one who loves you just as you are. Why set yourself up for something else? Why not get what you want? Why pretend to make someone fit what she is not? It doesn't mean you don't love her. It means you make a choice and say yes or no because you love yourself also. You make a choice, and you are responsible for your choices. Then if the choices are not working well, you do not blame yourself. You simply make another choice. But let's imagine that you get a dog, and you love cats. You want your dog to behave like a cat, and you try to change the dog, because it never says meow. What are you doing with a dog? Get a cat. This is the only way to begin a great relationship. First, you have to know what you want, how you want it, when you want it. You have to know exactly what the needs of your body are, what the needs of your mind are, and what fits well with you. There are millions of men and women, and each one is unique. Some will make a good match for you, and some won't make a good match at all. You can love everyone, but to deal with a person on an everyday basis, you will need someone more closely aligned to you. That person doesn't need to be exactly like you. The two of you only need to be like a key in a lock, a match that works. You need to be honest with yourself, and honest with everyone else. Project what you feel you really are, and don't pretend to be what you are not. It's as if you are in a market. You're going to sell yourself, and you are also going to buy. In order to buy, you want to see the quality of what you're going to get. But in order to sell, you need to show others what you are. It isn't about being better or worse than someone else. It's about being what you are. If you see what you want, why not take a risk? But if you see it is not what you want, you know you're going to pay for it. Don't go around crying, "My lover abuses me," when it was so clear for you to see. Don't lie to yourself. Don't invent in people what is not there. Don't deny what you see just to get the merchandise, when that merchandise will not fit your needs. When you buy something you don't need, it ends up in the garage. It's the same in a relationship. If you know what you want, you will find it is just like your relationship with your dog, but better. Of course, it can take years for us to learn this painful lesson. But if you make a good beginning, the rest is going to be easier because you can be yourself. Perhaps you already have a certain amount of time invested in a relationship. If you choose to keep going, you can still have a new beginning by accepting and loving your partner just as she is. But first you will need to take a step back. You have to accept yourself and love yourself just the way you are. Only by loving and accepting yourself the way you are can you truly be and express what you are. You are what you are, and that is all you are. You don't need to pretend to be something else. When you pretend to be what you are not, you are always going to fail. Once you accept yourself just the way you are, the next step is to accept your partner. If you decide to be with a person, don't try to change anything about her. Just like your dog or your cat, let her be who she is. She has the right to be who she is. She has a right to be free. When you inhibit your partner's freedom, you inhibit your own, because you have to be there to see what your partner is doing or not doing. And if you love yourself so much, you're never going to give up your personal freedom. Can you see the possibilities a relationship offers? Explore the possibilities. Be yourself. Find a person who matches with you. Take the risk, but be honest. If it works, keep going. If it doesn't work, then do yourself and your partner a favor. Walk away. Let her go. Don't be selfish. Give your partner the opportunity to find what she really wants, and at the same time, give yourself the opportunity. If it's not going to work, it's better to look in a different direction. If you cannot love your partner the way she is, someone else can love her just as she is. Don't waste your time, and don't waste your partner's time. This is respect. If you are the provider and your partner is the addict, and this is not what you want, perhaps you would be happier with someone else. But if you decide to be in that relationship, do your best. Do your best because you are the one who is going to reap the reward. If you can love your partner the way she is, if you can open your heart completely to your partner, you can reach heaven through your love. If you already have a cat and you want a dog, what can you do? You can start practicing from this point forward. You have to aim for a new beginning by cutting your ties with the past and starting all over again. All of us can change, and it can be for the better. This is a new beginning for you to forgive whatever happened between you and your partner. Let it go because it was nothing but self-importance. It was nothing but misunderstanding. It was nothing but someone being hurt and trying to get even. It's not worth whatever happened in the past to spoil the possibility that you can reach heaven in a relationship. Have the courage to go for it 100% or let it go. Let go of the past and begin every day at a higher level of love. This will keep the fire alive and make your love grow even more. Of course, you need to look at what it means to have the good moments and the bad moments. If being emotionally or physically abused is a bad moment, I don't know if a couple should keep going. If a bad moment is that someone loses her job, something is wrong at work, or someone has an accident, that is another kind of bad moment. If the bad moments come from fear, if they come from a lack of respect, humiliation, or hatred, I don't know how many bad moments a couple can survive. In the relationship with your dog, you can have a bad moment. For whatever reasons, it happens. An accident, a bad day at work, or whatever. You come home and the dog is looking for your attention. You may not feel like playing with the dog, but the dog will not feel hurt that you don't want to play, because it doesn't take it personally. Once the dog celebrates your arrival and finds out that you don't want to play, the dog goes and plays by itself. The dog doesn't stand there and insist that you be happy. If you don't feel like being happy and you only want to be quiet, it's nothing personal. It has nothing to do with your partner. But that silence can cause your partner to make a lot of assumptions. What did I do now? It's because of me. It has nothing to do with your partner. Left alone, the tension will go away and you will return to happiness. That is why the key in the lock has to be a match, because if one of you has a bad moment or an emotional crisis, your agreement is to allow each other to be what you are. Then the relationship is another story. It's another way of being, and the whole thing can be very beautiful. Relationship is an art. The dream that two create is more difficult to master than one. To keep the two of you happy, you have to keep your half perfect. You are responsible for your half, and your half has a certain amount of garbage. The one who has to deal with that garbage is you, not your partner. And it's the same with your partner's half. Your partner has a certain amount of garbage. Knowing your partner has garbage, you allow her to deal with her own garbage. You are going to love her and accept her with all of her garbage. You are going to respect her garbage. You are not in the relationship to clean your partner's garbage. She is going to clean her own. If you understand the concept of the wounded mind, you will understand why romantic relationships are so difficult. The emotional body is sick. It has wounds. It has poison. If we are not aware that we are sick or that our partner is sick, we become selfish. The wounds hurt, and we have to protect our wounds, even from the one we love. But if we have the awareness, we can have different agreements. When we are aware that our partner has emotional wounds, we certainly don't want to touch her wounds, we don't want to push her to heal her wounds, and we don't want her to push us to heal our wounds. Take the risk and take the responsibility to make a new agreement with your partner, an agreement that works for you. If it doesn't work, change that agreement and create a new one. Use your imagination to explore new possibilities, to create new agreements based on respect and love. Communication through respect and love is the whole key to keeping the love alive and never getting bored in your relationship. It's about finding your voice and stating your needs. It's about trusting yourself and trusting your partner. What you're going to share with your partner is not the garbage, but your love, your romance, your understanding. The goal is for the two of you to be happier and happier, and that calls for more and more love. If you treat your partner with love and respect, who's going to get the benefit? No one else but you. If you are in a relationship, and you work with your half, and your partner works with the other half, you will see how quickly progress is made. Love is what makes you happy, and if you become the servant of love, and your partner becomes the servant of love, you can just imagine all the possibilities. The day will come when you can be with your partner with no guilt and no blame, no anger and no sadness. That day will be wonderful when you can be completely open, only to share, only to serve, only to give your love. It's no longer a war of control. It's about service. But you can only do that when the love you have for yourself is very strong.
Chapter 6, The Magical Kitchen. Imagine that you have a magical kitchen in your home. In that magical kitchen, you can have any food you want from any place in the world in any quantity. You never worry about what to eat. Whatever you wish for, you can have at your table. You are generous with your food, and your house is always full of people who come to eat the food from your magical kitchen. Then one day someone knocks at your door, and it's a person with a pizza. You open the door, and the person looks at you and says, "Hey, do you see this pizza? I'll give you this pizza if you let me control your life. You are never going to starve because I can bring pizza every day. You just have to be good to me." Can you imagine your reaction? In your kitchen, you can have the same pizza, even better. Yet this person comes to you and offers you food if you just do whatever he wants you to do. You are going to laugh and say, "No, thank you. I have plenty of food. You can come into my house and eat whatever you want, and you don't have to do anything. No one will manipulate me with food." Now imagine exactly the opposite. Several weeks have gone by, and you haven't eaten. You are starving, and you have no money to buy food. The person comes with a pizza and says, "Hey, there's food here. You can have this food if you just do what I want you to do." You can smell the food, and you are starving. You decide to accept the food and do whatever that person asks of you. You eat some food, and he says, "If you want more, you can have more, but you have to keep doing what I want you to do." You have food today, but tomorrow you may not have food, so you agree to do whatever you can for it. You can become a slave because of food, because you need food, because you don't have it. Then, after a certain time, you have doubts. You say, "What am I going to do without my pizza? I cannot live without it. What if my partner decides to give the pizza to someone else? My pizza." Now imagine that instead of food, we are talking about love. You have an abundance of love in your heart. You have love not just for yourself, but for the whole world. You love so much that you don't need anyone's love. You share your love without condition, and someone knocks on your door and says, "Hey, I have love for you here. You can have my love if you just do whatever I want you to do." When you are full of love, what is going to be your reaction? You will laugh and say, "Thank you, but I don't need your love. I have the same love here in my heart, even bigger and better, and I share my love without condition." But if you're starving for love and you taste that love, you're going to do whatever you can for love. You can even be so needy that you give your whole soul just for a little attention. Your heart is like that magical kitchen. If you open your heart, you already have all the love you need. There's no need to go around the world begging for love. "Please, someone love me. I'm so lonely. I need someone to love me to prove that I'm worthy of love." We have love right here inside us, but we don't see this love. Can you see the drama humans create when they believe they don't have love? They are starving for love, and when they taste a little love from someone else, they become needy and obsessive about that love. Then comes the big drama. What am I going to do if he leaves me? How can I live without her? They cannot live without the provider, the one who provides them with the everyday doses. And for that little piece of love, because they are starving, they allow other people to control their lives. They let others tell them what to do, what not to do, how to dress, how to behave, what to believe. "I love you if you behave in this way. I love you if you let me control your life. I love you only if you are good to me. If not, then forget it." The problem with humans is that they don't know they have a magical kitchen in their heart. All this suffering begins because long ago we closed our hearts and we no longer feel the love that is there. At some point in our life we became afraid to love because we believed love isn't fair. Love hurts. We tried to be good enough for someone else. We tried to be accepted by someone else, and we failed. We have already had two or three lovers and a few broken hearts. To love again is to risk too much. Of course, we have so many self-judgments that we can't possibly have any self-love. And if there's no love for ourselves, how can we even pretend that we share love with someone else? When we go into a relationship, we become selfish because we are needy. It's all about me. We are so selfish that we want the person with whom we are sharing our life to be as needy as we are. We want someone who needs me in order to justify our existence, in order to feel that we have a reason to be alive. We think we are searching for love, but we are searching for someone we can control and manipulate. There is a war of control in human relationships because we were domesticated to compete for the control of the attention. What we call love, someone who needs me, isn't love. It is selfishness. Selfishness doesn't work because there is no love there. We search for love outside ourselves when love is all around us. Love is everywhere, but we don't have the eyes to see. Our emotional body is no longer tuned to love. We are so afraid to love because it isn't safe to love. The fear of rejection frightens us. We have to pretend to be what we are not. We try to be accepted by our partner when we don't accept ourselves. But the problem is not that our partner rejects us. The problem is that we reject ourselves because we are not good enough, because that is what we believe. You are never going to be good enough for yourself when the idea of perfection is completely wrong. It's a false concept. It's not even real. But you believe it. Not being perfect, you reject yourself, and the level of self-rejection depends upon how strong the adults were in breaking your integrity. After domestication, it is no longer about being good enough for anyone else. You are no longer good enough for yourself, because the big judge is always reminding you that you are not perfect. As I said before, you can never forgive yourself for not being what you wish to be, and that's the real problem. If you can change that, you take care of your half of the relationship. The other half is not your problem. If you tell someone you love him and that person says, "Well, I don't love you," is that a reason for you to suffer? Just because someone rejects you doesn't mean that you have to reject yourself. If one person doesn't love you, someone else will love you. There's always someone else. And it's better to be with someone who wants to be with you than to be with someone who has to be with you. You have to focus on the most wonderful relationship you can have, the relationship with yourself. It is not about being selfish. It is about self-love. These are not the same. You are selfish with yourself because there is no love there. You need to love yourself, and then, when you enter a relationship, you don't go into it because you need to be loved. It becomes a choice. You can choose someone if you want to, and you can see who he really is. When you don't need his love, you don't have to lie to yourself. You are complete. When love is coming out of you, you are not searching for love because you are afraid to be alone. You are happy to be alone, and to share is also fun. If you go into a relationship with selfishness, expecting that your partner is going to make you happy, it will not happen. And it's not that person's fault. It's your own. People learn to become selfish and to close their hearts so tightly. They are starving for love, not knowing that the heart is a magical kitchen. Your heart is a magical kitchen. Open your heart. Open your magical kitchen and refuse to beg for love. In your heart is all the love you need. Your heart can create any amount of love, not just for yourself, but for the whole world. You can give your love with no conditions. You can be generous with your love because you have a magical kitchen in your heart. Then all those starving people who believe the heart is closed will always want to be near you for your love. What makes you happy is love coming out of you. And if you are generous with your love, everyone is going to love you and you are never going to be alone. If you are selfish, you are always going to be alone and there is no one to blame but you. Your generosity will open all the doors, not your selfishness. Selfishness comes from poverty in the heart, from the belief that love is not abundant. But when we know that our heart is a magical kitchen, we are always generous and our love is completely unconditional.
Chapter 7. The Dream Master. Every relationship in your life can be healed. Every relationship can be wonderful. But it's always going to begin with you. You are responsible for the consequences of whatever you do, think, say, and feel. Perhaps it's hard for you to see what actions cause the consequence, what emotions, what thoughts. But you can see the consequence because you are suffering the consequence or enjoying the consequence. You control your personal dream by making choices. You have to see if you like the consequence of your choices or not. If it's a consequence you enjoy, then keep doing what you're doing. But if you don't like what's happening in your life, then try to find out what is causing the consequences you don't like. If you can transform the program of your personal dream, you can become a dream master. A dream master creates a masterpiece of life. But to master the dream is a big challenge because humans become slaves of their own dreams. The way we learn to dream is a setup. With all the beliefs we have that nothing is possible, it's hard to escape the dream of fear. In order to awake from the dream, you need to master the dream. That is why the Toltec created the Mastery of Transformation, to break free of the old dream and to create a new dream where everything is possible, including escaping from the dream. In the Mastery of Transformation, the Toltec divide people into dreamers and stalkers. The dreamers know that the dream is an illusion, and they play in the world, knowing it's an illusion. The stalkers are like a tiger or a jaguar, stalking every action and reaction. You have to stalk your own reactions. You have to work with yourself every moment. It takes a lot of time and courage because it's easier to take things personally and react the way you always react. And that leads you to a lot of mistakes, a lot of suffering and pain, because your reactions only generate more emotional poison and increase the drama. If you can control your reactions, you will find that soon you're going to see, meaning to perceive things as they really are. The mind normally perceives things as they are, but because of all the programming we have, we make interpretations of what we perceive, of what we hear, and mainly of what we see. There's a big difference between seeing the way people see in the dream and seeing without judgment, as it is. The difference is in the way your emotional body reacts to what you perceive. For example, if you are walking on the street and someone who doesn't know you says, "You are so stupid," and walks away, you can perceive and react to that in many ways. You can accept what that person said and think, "Yes, I must be stupid." You can get mad or feel humiliated or simply ignore it. The truth is that this person is dealing with his own emotional poison, and he said that to you because you were the first person to cross his path. It has nothing to do with you. If you can see that truth, you don't react. You can say, "Look at that person who is suffering so much," but you don't take it personally. This is just one example, but it applies to almost everything that happens in every moment. We have a little ego that takes everything personally, that makes us overreact. We don't see what is really happening because we react right away and make it part of our dream. Your reaction comes from a belief that is deep inside you. The way you react has been repeated thousands of times, and it becomes a routine for you. You're conditioned to be a certain way. And that is the challenge, to change your normal reactions, to change your routine, to take a risk and make different choices. If the consequence is not what you want, change it again and again until you finally get the result you want. We never chose to have the parasite, which is the judge, the victim, and the belief system. If we know we didn't have a choice, and we have the awareness that it's nothing but a dream, we recover something very important that we lost, something that religions call free will. Religions say that when humans were created, God gave us free will. This is true, but the dream took it away from us and kept it, because the dream controls the will of most humans. There are people who say, "I really want to change. There's no reason for me to be so poor. I'm intelligent. I deserve to live a good life, to earn much more money than I earn." They know this, but that is what their mind is telling them. What do these people do? They go and turn the television on and spend hours and hours watching it. Then how strong is their will? Once we have awareness, we have a choice. If we could have that awareness all the time, we could change our routines, change our reactions, and change our entire life. Once we have the awareness, we recover free will. When we recover free will, in any moment we can choose to remember who we are. Then, if we forget, we can choose again, if we have the awareness. But if we don't have the awareness, we have no choice. Becoming aware is about being responsible for your own life. You are not responsible for what is happening in the world. You are responsible for yourself. You didn't make the world the way it is. The world was already the way it is before you were born. You didn't come here with a great mission to save the world or to change society, but surely you come with an important mission. The real mission you have in life is to make yourself happy, and in order to be happy, you have to look at what you believe, the way you judge yourself, the way you victimize yourself. Everything is there for us, but first we need to have the courage to open our eyes, to use the truth, and to see what really is. Humans are so blind because we don't want to see. But if we open our eyes and see life as it is, we can avoid a lot of emotional pain. We are alive and we need to take risks. And if we fail, so what? Who cares? It doesn't matter. We learn and move on without judgment. We don't need to judge. We don't need to blame or feel guilt. We just need to accept our truth and intend a new beginning. If we can see ourselves the way we are, that is the first step toward self-acceptance, toward stopping the self-rejection. Once we are able to accept ourselves just the way we are, everything can start changing from that point forward. Everyone has a price, and life respects that price. But that price is not measured in dollars or in gold. It's measured in love. More than that, it is measured in self-love. When you love yourself, your tolerance for self-abuse is very low. It's very low because you respect yourself. You like yourself the way you are. But if you don't like yourself, it doesn't matter where you go. You are right there. What if we don't like ourselves? We try to get numb with alcohol to forget our suffering. We go to a bar to drink, and guess who's going to be there? People just like us, who try to avoid themselves, and who also try to get numb. We get numb together. We start talking about our suffering, and we understand each other very well. We even start to enjoy it. We understand each other perfectly because we vibrate in the same frequency. We are being self-destructive. Then I hurt you, you hurt me, a perfect relationship in hell. What happens when you change? For whatever reason, you no longer need the alcohol. It's now okay to be with yourself, and you really enjoy it. But you have the same friends, and everyone's drinking. They get numb. And they start getting happier. But you can clearly see that their happiness is not real. What they call happiness is a rebellion against their own emotional pain. You no longer fit in. And of course they resent you because you're no longer like them. Hey, you're rejecting me because you no longer drink with me. Now you have to make a choice. You can step back, or you can go to another level of frequency and meet people who finally accept themselves like you do. You find there is another realm of reality. A new way of relationship, and you no longer accept certain kinds of abuse.
Chapter 8. Sex. The Biggest Demon in Hell. If we could take humans out of the creation of the universe, we would see that the whole creation, the stars, the moon, the plants, the animals, everything, is perfect just the way it is. Life doesn't need to be justified or judged. It keeps going the way it is. If you put humans in that creation, but take away the ability to judge, you will find we are exactly like the rest of nature. We are not good or bad or right or wrong. We are just the way we are. In the dream of the planet, we have the need to justify everything, to make everything good or bad or right or wrong, when it is just the way it is, period. Humans accumulate a lot of knowledge. We learn all those beliefs, morals, and rules from our family, society, religion. And we base most of our behavior, most of our feelings, on that knowledge. We create angels and demons, and of course, sex becomes the biggest demon in hell. Sex is the biggest sin of the humans, when the human body is made for sex. You are a biological, sexual being, and that is just the way it is. Your body is so wise. All that intelligence is in the genes, in the DNA. The DNA doesn't need to understand or justify everything. It just knows. The problem is not with sex. The problem is the way we manipulate the knowledge and our judgments when there is really nothing to justify. We have a whole set of beliefs about what sex should be, about how relationships should be, and these beliefs are completely distorted. We pay a high price for a sexual encounter, but the instinct is so strong that we do it anyway. Then we have all that guilt, all that shame. We hear all that gossip about sex. Look at what this woman is doing. Ooh, look at that man. We have a whole definition of what a woman is, what a man is, how a woman should behave sexually, how a man should behave sexually. Men are always too macho or too wimpy, depending on who is judging. Women are always too thin or too fat. We have all these beliefs about how a woman should be in order to be beautiful. You have to buy the right clothes, create the right image so you can be seductive and fit that image. If you don't fit that image of beauty, you grow up believing that you're not worthy, that no one will like you. We believe so many lies about sex that we don't enjoy sex. Sex is for animals. Sex is evil. We should be ashamed to have sexual feelings. These rules about sex go completely against nature, and it's just a dream, but we believe it. Your true nature comes out, and it doesn't fit with all those rules. You are guilty. You are not what you should be. You are judged. You are victimized. You punish yourself, and it's not fair. This creates wounds that become infected with emotional poison. The mind plays this game, but the body doesn't care what the mind believes. The body just feels the sexual need. This is completely normal. It is not a problem at all. The body is going to feel sexual when it's excited, when it's touched, when it's visually stimulated, when it sees the possibility of sex. The body can feel sexual, and a few minutes later stop feeling sexual. If the stimulation ends, the body stops feeling the need for sex. But the mind is another story. In the mind, we create a whole picture in this bubble of illusion, and the mind takes responsibility for everything. The mind thinks it has the need for food, water, shelter, clothing, sex. But the mind has no needs at all, no physical needs. The mind doesn't need food, doesn't need oxygen, doesn't need water, doesn't need sex at all. How do we know this is true? When your mind says, "I need food," you eat, and the body is completely satisfied. But your mind still thinks it needs food. You keep eating and eating, and you cannot satisfy your mind with food because that need is not real. The need to cover your body is another example. Yes, your body needs to be covered because the wind is too cold or because the sun is too hot, but it's your body that has the need, and it's so easy to satisfy the need. When the need is in the mind, you can open the closet and it's full of clothes, but your mind isn't satisfied. What does it say? "I have nothing to wear." The mind needs another car, another vacation, a guest house for your friends. All those needs that you never can fully satisfy are in the mind. Well, it's the same with sex. When the need is in the mind, you cannot satisfy the need. When the need is in the mind, the whole judgment, the whole knowledge, is also there. This makes sex so difficult to deal with. The mind doesn't need sex. What the mind really needs is love, not sex. More than the mind, it's your soul that needs love, because your mind can survive with fear. Fear is energy also, and it's food for the mind. Not exactly the food you want, but it works. We need to give the body the freedom from the tyrant that is the mind. If we no longer have the need for food or for sex in our mind, everything becomes so easy. The first step is to split the needs into two categories. These are the needs of the body. These are the needs of the mind. The mind confuses the needs of the body with its own needs because the mind needs to know, "What am I?" We live in this world of illusion, and we have no idea what we are. The mind creates all these questions. "What am I?" becomes the biggest mystery, and any answer satisfies the need to feel safe. The mind says, "I am the body. I am what I see. I am what I think. I am what I feel. I am hurting. I am bleeding." The affinity between the mind and the body is so close that the mind believes, "I am the body." The body has a need, and the mind says, "I need." The mind takes everything about the body personally because it tries to understand, "What am I?" So it is completely normal that the mind starts to gain control of the body at a certain point, and you live your life until something happens that shakes you and allows you to see what you are not. You start to become aware when you see what you are not, when your mind starts to realize that it is not the body. Your mind says, "Then what am I? Am I the hand? If I cut off my hand, I am still me. Then I'm not the hand." You take away what is not you, until in the end the only thing that remains is what you really are. It's a long process of the mind finding its own identity. In the process, you let go of the personal story, what makes you feel safe, until finally you understand what you really are. You find out that you are not what you believe you are, because you never chose your beliefs. These beliefs were there when you were born. You find out that you are also not the body, because you start to function without your body. You start to notice that you are not the dream. that you are not the mind. If you go deeper, you start noticing that you are not the soul either. Then what you find out is so incredible. You find out that what you are is a force that makes it possible for your body to live, a force that makes it possible for your whole mind to dream. Without you, without this force, your body would collapse on the floor. Without you, your whole dream just dissolves into nothing. What you really are is that force that is life. Life is not the body, it is not the mind, it is not the soul, it is a force. Through this force, a newborn baby becomes a child, a teenager, an adult. It reproduces and grows old. When life leaves the body decomposes and turns to dust. You are life passing through your body, passing through your mind, passing through your soul. Once you find that out, not with the logic, not with the intellect, but because you can feel that life, you find out that you are the force that makes the flowers open and close, that makes the hummingbird fly from flower to flower. You find out that you are in every tree, you are in every animal, vegetable, and rock. You are that force that moves the wind and breathes through your body. The whole universe is a living being that is moved by that force, and that is what you are. You are life.
Chapter 9. The Divine Huntress. In Greek mythology, there's a story about Artemis, the Divine Huntress, who fulfilled her needs so easily and lived in perfect harmony with the forest. Everything in the forest loved Artemis, and to be hunted by her was an honor. It never seemed like Artemis was hunting. Whatever she needed came to her. That is why she was the best hunter. But this also made her the most difficult prey. Her animal form was a magical deer that was almost impossible to hunt. Artemis lived in perfect harmony in the forest, until one day a king gave an order to Hercules, the son of Zeus, who was searching for his own transcendence. The order was that Hercules had to hunt the magical deer of Artemis. Hercules, being the undefeated son of Zeus, did not refuse. He went to the forest to hunt the deer, but there was no way Hercules could get this deer unless he became a better hunter than Artemis. Hercules called upon Hermes, the messenger of the gods, the fastest one, to lend him his wings. Now Hercules was as fast as Hermes, and soon the most valuable prey was in the hands of Hercules. You can imagine the reaction of Artemis. She was hunted by Hercules, and of course she wanted to get even. She wanted to hunt Hercules, and she did her best to capture him, but Hercules was now the most difficult prey. Although she tried and tried, Artemis could not capture him. Artemis felt a strong need to have Hercules, but of course it was only an illusion. She believed she was in love with Hercules, and she wanted him for herself. The one thing on her mind was to get Hercules, and it became an obsession until she was no longer happy. Artemis started to change. She became a predator and was no longer in harmony with the forest, because now she hunted just for the pleasure of getting the prey. The animals were afraid, and the forest started to reject her, but Artemis didn't care. She only had Hercules on her mind. Hercules would go to the forest to visit Artemis, and every time he did, Artemis did her best to hunt him. Hercules had no idea what was going on in the mind of Artemis. He didn't notice that she was hunting him. Hercules loved and respected Artemis, but this is not what she wanted. Artemis wanted to hunt him and own him. Of course, everyone in the forest noticed the difference in Artemis except her. In her mind, she was still the divine huntress. She didn't have the awareness that she had fallen. She wasn't aware that the heaven that was the forest had become hell, because after her fall, the rest of the hunters fell with her. They all became predators. One day Hermes took an animal form, and just as Artemis was ready to destroy him, he became a god, and she rediscovered the wisdom she had lost. He let her know she had fallen, and with his new awareness, Artemis went to Hercules to ask for his forgiveness. It was nothing but her personal importance that brought her to that fall. Then she looked around the forest and saw what she had done to the forest. She apologized to every flower and to every animal until she recovered love. Once again, Artemis became the divine huntress. I tell this story to let you know that all of us are hunters, and all of us are prey. What is it that we hunt? We hunt to fulfill our needs. I have talked about the needs of the body versus the needs of the mind. When the mind believes it is the body, the needs are only illusions, and they cannot be fulfilled. When we hunt those needs that are unreal in the mind, we become the predators. We are hunting for what we don't need. Humans hunt for love. We feel that we need that love because we believe we don't have love, because we don't love ourselves. We hunt for love in other humans just like us, expecting to get love from them when these humans are in the same condition as we are. They don't love themselves either, so how much love can we get from them? We merely create a bigger need that isn't real. We keep hunting and hunting, but in the wrong place, because other humans don't have the love we need. When Artemis became aware of her fall, she went back to herself, because everything she needed was inside herself. It is the same for all of us, because all of us are like Artemis after she fell and before her redemption. We are hunting for love. We are hunting for justice and happiness. We are hunting for God, but God is inside us. The hunting of the magical deer teaches us that we have to hunt inside ourselves. Humans who